There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? Welcome back to Max Mike Movies. We are finally back to our series, Directors in Short Pants. We keep getting interrupted by those pesky summer blockbusters. But summer's over, and we're not. This week, it was my turn to choose, and choose I did. Wes Anderson is one of the most distinctive voices in Hollywood, but is he off-key? Wait. Maybe, is he sounding a little froggy? No. I got this. Has his voice become kind of... Does he sing like... Metaphor... Recalculating. Wes Anderson had to start somewhere, and it seems he started off with a little film called Bottle Rocket. He and his buddies, two of the greater Wilsons, Luke and Owen, and a lesser Wilson, Andrew, got together to make this twee little film back in 1996. And from that moment, Anderson was a household word. But was that word Pine Sol? Or was it... Okay, right, I'll stop. I'll stop. Hey, not everyone starts out strong. But you know who does? That would be our host, Max. I have a cunning plan, Levine. Say something clever and plannish, Max.
Death and terror are stalking the land like two big stalking things.
Brilliant. Over on this side of the fence, it's just little old me, Mike, for the love of all that's holy, please stop, loose. We're going to get back to Bottle Rocket in just a moment. First, we're going to slide into our...
Poll question.
Last week, Max asked y'all what movie or type of movie you like to watch when you're in a bad mood. We got a few answers. Vince, our back bacon pal from way, way, way up north, offered this up. Good day, eh? He offered this up on the website. Quote, I'm having a hard time answering the poll question and not answering Aguirre, Wrath of God.
Come on!
It's soothing. Depending
Werner
on how...
Werner Herzog, so well known for his soothing movies.
I like his comedies. Depending on how sad or bad a mood I am in will change a film I might watch to feel better. Past choices were the 60s and only version of Bedazzled or The Loved One, but I will choose a movie in the monster genre more than anything else. A Ray Harryhausen film or some kaiju film I watched as a young kid in the local cinema are great for changing my mood. For it to work, though, I need to watch it by myself and not be interrupted, end quote. Ah, what could be more calming than Werner Herzog? Thanks, Vince.
Obviously, Gamera.
I was going to say, I loved his take on Gamera. He was great. Mm-hmm. A lot of blood in that one, though.
Yeah, and actually, Gamera, I didn't know Gamera smoked.
Gamera's films are actually surprisingly bloody, especially when the Gouron shows up, the knife-headed monster that literally chops Gauss up into little slices.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
yeah, it's not. Next up was a note dropped into the mailbag by our old pal, Bill Olading. Bill wrote, quote, so what happened after the White Knight climbed up the tower and rescued the damsel in distress? Edward Lewis asks, clutching the fire escape. Vivian smiles down at him from the level above and answers, quote, oh, she rescues him right back. This iconic line closes out Pretty Woman 1990, and it encapsulates their mutual rescue relationship perfectly. The film is one of my favorites and something that always feels fresh when I return to it. I feel fresh. Oh, it's my go-to when I am feeling unwell. Wardrobe, music, and the supporting cast all contribute wonderfully to the whole. Excellently scripted and shot, individuals set up as stock characters continue to surprise you as they surprise themselves. Julia Roberts, real Julia Roberts, earns every ounce of her stardom. One of Hollywood's best, end quote. Ah, someday I will watch that one. Thanks, Bill. That's like apparently his favorite. It's sort of like waiting for Brian. Well, we'll get to Brian in a minute. Yeah. Swinging over to Facebook, we have Charles Forsyth, who answered, quote, I think a movie only helps a bad mood if it gives you some kind of release from what's putting you in that mood or lets you connect to it in a way that lets you process it. If I'm angry, a fun anti-hero movie is great. When you're mad, you want to punch your problems in the face. Well, there's a relationship to some of the actors in this week's movie. Never mind. He continues, anti-heroes don't set their phasers on stun, but in the end, they support a morally good outcome. Deadpool is a perfect example. Other than that, I am generally going to like a movie that mirrors the bad mood. If I'm feeling sad, I can't get into a zany comedy like Pee-wee's Big Adventure. If I'm lonely, I don't want to watch a movie about people who are always with friends. I want to watch a movie about someone else who is feeling lonely. If I'm feeling alienated, I want to watch Edward Scissorhands. I think you get the idea, end quote. Huh. That's an interesting take. Do you do the same thing, Max? And we'll get to your choices in a minute, but...
Yeah, no, I do get that. It depends on the sort of bad mood I'm in.
Hmm.
Being angry versus, say, being depressed or frustrated. Yeah, the type of movie you do want a catharsis. Yeah, I get that.
I thought
sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes, though, it's you want a complete distraction. You want your brain to just suddenly change gears.
I thought for you, when all else failed, it was Steven Universe all the way.
No, that I kind of overdosed on, but yeah, Steven Universe is a very good panacea.
Brian Mundo is next with, quote, something where everyone, or at least a lot of the characters, get murdered.
Murdered?
I root for the murderer, too. Also, I just wanted you to have to say murdered.
Murdered.
End quote, murdered. Wow, he didn't say Fifth Element. Thanks, Brian, because nobody gets murdered in that.
Something's wrong. Maybe it's not him. Maybe he's been murdered.
Tyler Stewart said, quote, Princess Bride never fails to cheer me up, end quote. That one does seem to be a common favorite. Thanks, Tyler. Richard's response went, quote, there isn't a kind of movie so much as a certain movie favorite.
I'm sorry. Which Richard is this?
Just Richard. When the last election was happening, I had to turn the results off and we watched Singing in the Rain. Nope, not doing it. Made the world a good place for an hour and a half or so. The Errol Flynn Robin Hood is another one for me, as is The Fifth Element, as is Casablanca, end quote. There's The Fifth Element, and it would be in there somewhere. Heck, I watch Casablanca almost any time. Thanks, Richard.
Yes, well done inventing that.
Richard, down movie lastly. Nope. Over to the date phone. You should be ready for this, Max. We have Doris Hempelmeyer and her latest.
Hang on, I got to get some more pomade in my hair.
As long as it's in your hair.
I didn't say which hair.
Okay. Here is her latest try for Max's favor.
Hello, Max Night Movies. Hi, Max. This is Dora Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question for this week, which just so happens to be, what movie do I put on if I'm feeling in a bad mood? Well, there's a few answers for that because it depends on what caused the bad mood. Is it bad or is it that? You know what I mean? So I think the easiest thing is to just, I have top three movies that are always my go-to movies. If I want to feel just warm and fuzzy and golden, like I'm holding a teddy bear, it's going to be Strictly Ballroom. If it's going to be, I just need a good laugh, if I want a dumb laugh, I just want to laugh for the sake of laughing, it's going to be Airplane. And then if I want to laugh and feel good at the same time, it's going to be What's Up, Doc? Those are my answers. Those are my go-tos. And if you want a fourth one just to throw in there, you know, it's just one of those movies I've seen it a million times for a lot of reasons, and that's Twister. I know, it's a weird thing to put in a list, but I have a soft spot for it. What can I tell you? Anyway, it was wonderful to hear this week, and I can't wait to hear next week. Well, except for Max, because I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Strictly Ballroom, Airplane, and Twister. Okay, well, kiss, kiss, love, love, Marilyn to you too, Doris.
Very nice. That's what I expect from my little pomegranate.
I have to say, Strictly Ballroom is a pretty feel-good movie.
It is. It is a charming little movie.
As long as you remember one important thing. There are no new steps. What about you, Max? What is your go-to movie when the clouds are gray?
The one that just picks me right up, of course, is Rogue Warfare 3.
But not 2.
Not 2. No. And 1 is just, it's too painful to watch.
It's the dance number, right?
Yeah, it's the poodles and the neon-painted clothes irons. It brings back too many memories.
Yeah, of Rogue Warfare's 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. Well,
or Jurassic Shark 3.
Possibly Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS, but
that's
I don't know. I usually like an animated movie, something that will just take me out of reality. Something like, Wreck-It Ralph.
Or Brave Little Toaster.
No, that one's a grim movie, quite honestly.
You'll never throw anything away again if you want the Brave Little Toaster.
My God. Forget what Toy Story makes you think about giving away your toys. Yikes.
Yeah, it's like this pro-hoarding film. It's a really, yeah. I don't know, I was so depressed at the end of that film.
Either that or sometimes I like, you know, kind of Jane Austen-y films. Sense and Sensibility is a big one for me. Mm. I just like, oh, I love watching people getting upset over someone using the wrong fork at dinner or this person smiling at you at the wrong angle becoming the great conflict.
Mm.
Yeah, and just watching, you know, nice clothes and thinking, wow, those houses would be really nice if they had central air.
They do have central air. You open the windows on one side and you open the windows on the other. There you go.
There you go. What about you? What movie gives you the warm fuzzies when you need them?
I tend to go, honestly, the number one thing I look for is films that show people being happy. Like people being made or making themselves happy. There's something, mm-hmm. as I get older, I tend towards that kind of thing. There's a couple of older films that I really like. Desk Set, which is a Tracy and Hepburn film my mom used to love. I don't know what it is about that film. It made me really want to work in an office when I was a kid. It's like, oh, they're having such fun. And look at the Christmas party. Everyone's drunk. That looks great. Let's do that.
And then you find the evil of computers.
Well, it's funny how it's like, oh, no, this isn't going to replace you. Yes, it is. things like that. Casablanca, I'll watch anytime, honestly. Yeah. Singing in the Rain, I will agree with Richard, who said that too. It's like, it's just such a fun film, and it really does take you away. I am not work the way that Charles works. I can't watch a film that's depicting the thing I'm feeling bad about. It just makes me feel worst. Yeah. But that's fine. Whatever makes you happy is great. You know what makes us happy is you giving us answers, and we love them, so thank you very much for those. You inspire us to ask another question.
You complete us.
You complete me. Bleep you.
F you.
Another deeper. What actor, male or female, for me that term is, it doesn't matter who what you are. What actor, male or female, have you turned your back on? Who has done something either on or off the screen that has made you just say, no more? Let us know and we'll spout your wisdom to the stars. But for the moment... Spout.
Let it all out. I had a hot dog with too much sauerkraut.
Thank you, Weird Max. But for the moment, let's get back to our film, Bottle Rocket, and...
The facts.
This is Wes Anderson's first. Let's see how he did. Budget, $5 million. Well, that's pretty modest.
Mm. Yeah, I bet I know whose salary most of that went to.
Yeah, probably not at that time. Mm. Take $560,000. That's even more modest. It might have something to do with it only being shown in 49 theaters.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Max,
I think you meant ouch.
Oh, yeah. Ow. Wow.
Speaking of which.
Crazy.
Owen Wilson, who co-wrote this movie, was devastated with the response to it and seriously considered giving up acting and enlisting in the Marines. Well.
Sorry. Every time I do Owen Wilson, I start sliding right into Peter Lorre. You despise me.
I probably would if I gave you half a thought.
Yeah.
Speaking of Owen and his brothers Luke and Andrew, this is their feature film debut. Yay!
So this movie is this movie is responsible for them.
Yes.
Thanks, Wes.
The motel where this movie was mostly shot was in danger of going out of business. No idea why. So since 2011, a group of fans hold a big party there once a year. That was more successful than the film, as it has heightened business for the threatened motel.
Okay, nice.
Executive producer James L. Brooks' name might sound familiar.
Simpsons did it.
I mean, that's one of many things. He's done a ton in the entertainment industry.
He's done everything.
Yep. Notably being one of the names behind The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Rhoda.
Mm.
What the heck kind of name is Dignan? Well, it's the last name of Anderson and Wilson friend Stephen Dignan, who appears in this film as Rob. No, no, not Bob.
Oh, Rob.
Oh, Mr. Grant.
But if you notice, it's also Nangid backwards. Think about it.
I won't. Interestingly, Martin Scorsese names this as one of his top 10 films of the 90s.
What?
That's what it said.
Okay, this really doesn't seem like a Scorsese film.
No.
There's barely any blood.
Oh, there's a little shooting in it. Well, there's one shot fired, I think, in the entire film.
I don't think anybody gets hit.
yeah, Applejack gets hit.
No, he doesn't. He's having a heart attack.
Oh, I thought he actually got hit.
No, if you watch him, there's no blood on him anywhere.
Well, I thought that was just a Wes Anderson thing because he doesn't like blood, but whatever.
You didn't notice Luke Wilson's nose spurting blood when he gets hit?
Yeah, I guess there was that. They didn't show it spurting enough. Oops. When it was shown at a test screening, this movie rated the worst in Columbia Pictures history up till that point.
Ow.
Oops.
Ooh. Ow, ow, ow.
Believe it or not, Owen Wilson, though co-writer, was not originally going to appear in the film. Sure. You might say, hey, you do realize that the name Bob Mapplethorpe carries a certain baggage with it, don't you?
I was wondering about that, yeah.
Well, it seems they did, and you can see the connection. I mean, can't you?
What? No.
Me neither.
Does he ever look at a camera?
Not gay.
I mean, he's being filmed by one, I guess. Does that
I don't
count?
Even think he makes a fist. Oops, sorry.
Ooh, ah! Oh, God.
Can you make it talk? Anyway.
Stop it!
It wasn't a very heavy trivia week, so here's a little about Wes Anderson himself. Like another of the directors we've talked about in this series, Richard Linklater, Wes Anderson was born in Texas.
Yeehaw.
He used his own high school as the setting for his second film, Rushmore. He must have liked it.
See our entire episode on Rushmore.
See our entire episode on Richard Linklater. Like Spielberg and, well, honestly, a lot of people, he started making films when he was a kid on a Super 8 camera. Heck, I did. Well, no, mine was regular 8, but same difference. In college, he met the Wilson boys, who would often show up in his movies later on.
Yeah, boy, do they ever.
Yep. It was Rushmore that kind of restarted Bill Murray's career. Murray would appear in many of Anderson's films after that.
Oh, yeah.
And there's probably all sorts of Hollywood dirt, but that's not what we're here for. Unless you have something, Max?
Yeah, how the hell did he get Gene Hackman?
He asked.
I mean, that's where I figure the budget went. You know, let's say $5 million, so Gene gets $4.5 million, and we make
I think you mean James Caan.
Same thing.
And not at all.
Shut up. It is.
Gene Hackman is not in this film.
No. Jimmy Caan. I mean, this is post friggin' Godfather. This is James Caan was a name. Not as big in the 90s, I guess.
No, not by 96.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, we're so excited to watch all of his son's work. So, why don't we let's get to the twee. We're somewhere, somewhen. Anthony is a troubled young man who's put himself into a nice mental hospital to get some rest from something. His friend Dignan misunderstands his being there voluntarily and has concocted a plan to break Anthony out. Anthony, not wanting to disappoint Dignan, goes through with it. And he's free! Free to become a part of another of Dignan's plans. To rip off a bookstore? This is just the first step in a lifelong set of steps that Dignan has carefully set down in a notebook and which will decide and define the rest of their lives. They need a third, so con their friend Bob into being their driver as he's the only one with a car. Bob is itching to get out from under his brother, Future Man, who has been bullying him since they were kids. So, with their careful plan laid out, the three rip off the bookstore, much to the confusion of the employees of said bookstore. Worried that their status with the local cops, they flee town and hole up in a motel, which is also somewhere and somewhen. There, Anthony starts to fall in love with Inez, a housekeeping worker. While there, Bob learns that his brother has been picked up by the cops because of the pot plants that Bob has been growing in the backyard. So he flees to go save his brother. Through a mistranslation, Anthony thinks that Inez doesn't love him and certainly can't go with him when he and Dignan have to go back and face the music. They steal another car, which was probably just left by the side of the road, and catch up with Bob. But there's strife between Dignan and Anthony. The fellowship is thrown asunder, until Dignan has hooked up with a local thief and his gang and has a plan for a bigger heist. This time, nothing can go wrong. Except everything does. Dignan ends up in prison, Anthony finds out that Inez does love him, and Bob does whatever it is Bob does, the end.
The film.
Usual question, Max. Had you seen this before?
I had not. I think I heard the title once.
Oh.
But honestly, when I did, I didn't know it was a Wes Anderson movie.
Oh. No.
I just saw it.
I'm saying, in general, pro or con for Wes Anderson?
I used to really like him. I'm getting a little tired of him because all his movies, it's like, okay, how cute and weird can I be in this one? It's like, I got to give the... He feels like Krusty the Clown. You know, he's... Okay, hey, look, I'm doing the same crap I've been doing for 70 years. Ah, la, 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 la. He feels like almost a parody of himself now.
Hmm.
But he's done a bunch of movies I really like. Grand Budapest Hotel's terrific. Isle of Dogs I really like. The Royal Tenenbaums has bad associations for me, so I can't really go with that one. But he's done a ton that I really enjoy. Moonrise Kingdom's terrific.
Did you ever see Life Aquatic?
No, I've never seen that, and I keep meaning to because, you know, it's Bill Murray, Willem Dafoe, and it's basically sort of about, you know, a parody of Jacques Cousteau. It's the sort of thing I should love. I've never watched it.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, maybe someday. Maybe we'll do a whole Wes Anderson series. I don't know. How about you? I mean, I know you really like Wes Anderson.
I appreciate, like, I saw Rushmore before I knew who Wes Anderson was. Our mutual friend Libby and I, and I think her friend Setsuko watched it on video when it came out. And it was just quirky and interesting enough without being overboard. Mm-hmm. I had to be dragged to basically sit down and watch Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was, for some reason, I was just not interested in seeing the film. And my buddy, the Wheeze, made me sit and watch it. And it's really good.
Yeah.
And that one's animation. I almost think he works better in a way in animation because you're expecting it to be kind of twee and quirky anyway.
His style really works both in Fantastic Mr. Fox and in Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, I really liked Grand Budapest Motel. I'm trying to think what else of his. I didn't like Royal Tenenbaums, but that's, again, there's too much Wilson and too much Ben Stiller. So didn't care for that. And Asteroid City, up till that point, to me, was as most concentrated Wes Anderson as I'd ever seen. And I thought it was quirky and fun. I enjoyed it. So, but we had one of our listeners or just answerers a couple of weeks ago when we were asking about directors you can't stand mentioned Wes Anderson, and he said specifically because he'd become a parody of himself. I think it was Aaron Perez. Don't quote me on that, but. And I can see that. You can get to a point where you're just, where you've got nowhere to go. The only growth you've had is in the concentration of your style. And I haven't seen his latest one. It just came out, I think, last month. Yeah. But I have a feeling if it's even more concentrated than Astro City,
somebody come out wearing plaid. As we have hit peak Wes Anderson with this movie.
He did do that short Sugar something on Netflix with Benedict Cumberbatch. Yes. That
the
was
Secret
really
Life
cool.
of Henry Sugar. That was good. There were a couple of shorts in there that he did, like four of them. I watched, I think, two or three. They were all very good and very interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, though, if you want a good laugh, I think, go to YouTube and look up Saturday Night Live Wes Anderson horror movie.
Oh.
Because they do a preview for if Wes Anderson did a horror movie, and it friggin' nails it.
Is Bill Hader in it by any chance?
Yes, I think he is.
I love Bill Hader.
Bill Hader's hilarious. And it's, oddly enough, it's Ed Norton doing Owen Wilson. And he's uncanny.
Interesting.
Wow. I get the wow perfectly. Yes.
Cool. Well, speaking of the Wilsons, we should get to the cast.
Yes.
It's Wilson heavy this week. It starts off with Luke Wilson, whom, if I remember correctly, you have described as having a face that is, what's the word? Very punchable, I believe. Both of them do.
I think Owens is a bit more, but... Luke shares the genetic quality of
face punchableness.
Yeah. But how do you think...
I believe it's facious punchiousness or something.
I think you just made that up. But what do you think of him in this film?
Oddly enough, I think the part really fits him.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, you know, likable, but what do you call, feckless, you know, no real strength, no real, no direction.
Otne ute eitbre.
I don't know about that. He doesn't seem stupid, unlike other characters we'll get to.
Yeah.
He doesn't know anything, and he doesn't really... You have the feeling he wants to know more, but he has no idea how to go about it.
Yes.
And I think he does a nice job, and I don't know why his character doesn't want a haircut. His hair looks terrible.
Well, you know. I think one of the issues for me is that I'm seeing Luke in this role now, as opposed to first. Because he was in that 70s show as basically that annoying guy you really want to punch. Yeah, he showed up as somebody I think he was going out with. Who's the long redhead that
Donna is the character.
Topher Grace was going at. Yeah, I think he was a rival for Topher Grace, and I liked Topher Grace. And Luke Wilson's character was supposed to be a dink. So, you know, he always seems like he thinks he's cooler and more handsome than he actually is to me. But he fits the twee bill here just fine.
Yeah.
Then there's Owen. Who somehow didn't think he was going to be in this film. Really?
Okay. You wrote it. Owen, sure. Again, I think both of the Wilson boys, they get down on their knees and pray to whatever upright God they believe in for Wes Anderson. Because he's pretty much why they have a career. And he's, you know, as long as he's around, I assume they'll always have work.
Probably.
I mean, they've done a lot. Both of them have. They have a long filmography. Owen, I have always just found incredibly annoying.
Yep.
There is just that whole thing where his entire performance seems like he's winking at the camera. I have to say, I don't think he does that as much in this. It could probably because it's his first time, and he isn't as cocky because, you know, he hasn't done this.
He's not Owen Wilson yet.
Yes, he has not hit peak Owen Wilson.
I have one major problem with the two of them.
Okay.
And it unfortunately is exacerbated by Wes Anderson's style, which is, let me get the camera as close to you as I possibly can. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm sitting there going, it's obvious they're brothers. They're not supposed to be in the film, but it is obvious that they are brothers.
Yeah, the family resemblance, especially then when their hair was a little similar. They didn't have as distinctive haircuts. When you get those close-ups of two shots of them, it's really clear that they're sharing a lot of genetic code.
Well, their mannerisms, too. Like, it's just, these are two people who grew up together.
Body language, everything. Yeah. However, it does kind of work in this. You believe that these two have been friends forever.
Sure. I just don't know why, but...
It's one of those, I always liked the line from the movie Jennifer's Body, where there are these two girls who shouldn't be friends, but were friends when they were like 5 years old. And she says, sandbox love lasts forever.
Somehow you and I never played in a sandbox, but you know.
No, we did not.
I'm going to skip a few people because honestly, they don't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I like Dr. Nichols, although he is the least professional psychiatrist I've ever seen.
He's there for five seconds. He barely has a part. I'm going to skip right to Robert Musgrave as Bob Mapplethorpe.
Bob.
I don't understand the character at all because he obviously comes from a lot of money. Why is he hanging around with these two?
All I can figure is they went to school together starting in first grade, and he just attached himself to them. Because let's face it, Bob is not exactly reeking of charisma.
No.
I'm betting he doesn't have a lot of friends. I am betting he was, in effect, the poor little rich boy who gets beaten up or bullied constantly by his brother, Zeppo Wilson. Yeah.
I didn't even know there was a third Wilson.
I didn't either. I did not know there was a third.
And he plays Future Man.
Which they never explain why he is called that.
Nope. But
there's nothing about... It's not like he wears a space suit or is into science fiction. He's just a big jarhead-looking bully.
But that's very Wes Anderson, isn't it?
It is. It's like, yes, I'm not going to explain anything.
Yeah, and okay. He plays a bully, and he's fine at it. He looks like a big jar-headed guy, and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, skip until we get to James Caan, honestly, because there's tiny little parts here and there.
What about Lumi Cavazos as Inez?
She doesn't even speak English for most of her part. She's nice. I think she's incredibly charismatic.
I wouldn't call her
charismatic. I would say that I can see why Anthony falls for her, but mm-hmm. she's so withdrawn, as you know, it makes sense. And almost none of her lines are in English. I really did not want her to fall for Anthony. I'm like, just don't.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that. It was when she says through Rocky, you know, I love him. My first thought is, why?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, maybe the sex was really great because we don't see much of it.
Well. But
why? This guy has, I am sorry, he's a lovable, but the emphasis is on loser.
Yeah.
This guy has loser stamped on his forehead.
Yeah. She's fine. She's got a nice little smile. Again, I just didn't want Anthony to I didn't want her to fall.
I thought she was very charming.
But then we get James Caan, and quite honestly, James Caan could have slept his way through this role because he's good enough that he didn't need to put much into it. But his character has this wonderful, jovial, weird, but I'm going menacing. To kill you, feel you?
Yes.
About him?
Yeah. He's cheerfully menacing.
Yeah. He's got this weird fixation with Japanese culture to the point that at one point, inexplicably, where his hair isn't long enough in one shot and then is in another to have a top knot, he has a top knot.
Don't know quite how he managed that. But
he's also wearing a kimono and socks and sandals. It's like, okay, I see what you're aiming for. You missed, but okay. But his character is, in a way, he kind of fits in for the audience because he's sitting there and going, I'm not falling for any of this. You guys are morons. And we're kind of feeling the same way. Not a big part, but he adds a different kind of humor to the film that I was happy to see.
Mm.
What did you think?
I spent most of my time going, why are you here?
Oops.
I mean, first off, James Caan to me is not very Wes Anderson-y.
No.
He's too rough and too real.
Mm.
He doesn't have that otherworldly Feywild aspect that a lot of them do. He seemed like he was in the wrong movie. And he's in it for so little. And you notice the story is fairly languid as we go along. And then once they meet him, it's like boom, 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 boom. All these things keep happening really, really quickly.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, it's very odd.
I enjoyed him.
He was fine, but I'm like, why are you here?
Mm. I think Wes Anderson likes to throw in people like that. Like initially, at the time, I wouldn't have thought that Bill Murray was the kind of guy to be in a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah.
And between this, or I should say that film, which was Rushmore and Lost in Translation, basically Bill Murray redefined himself. Also, Gene Hackman, like you said, how is Gene Hackman in a Wes Anderson film? But to be fair, Gene Hackman was such a good actor. He can fit into anything. If they remade Mary Poppins and he wanted to be in that, somehow it would work.
Somehow. Yep. I do want to mention one other actor. And that's Kumar Palana, who played, I've forgotten the character's name. Kumar Palana. But no, he plays actually Kumar. That's the character's name. The little Indian man.
Okay.
He shows up in the strangest movies. He's in Royal Tenenbaums. He's in The Terminal with Tom Hanks. And he has this odd sense of, I have wandered here from another dimension and I don't know what's going on.
The dimension of Anderson.
I've always found him to be really, whatever is in, you just know him. He has only been in like a couple dozen movies, but he always stands out to me.
Sure. He's there again for 30 seconds. He's barely there. But yeah, so the acting is Anderson-like, I would say. If you like the Wilsons, you'll probably like them in this.
Speaking of that, there's one of, in the opening's few scenes, when I'm at first going, this does not seem very Wes Anderson-y, until they get to Grace. Okay. Shay Fowler, who plays the little sister, who for some reason is about 90 years younger than
Anthony.
Yeah.
I mean, she's probably about 10 years younger, to be fair. I liked her, and I thought, okay, this is a Wes Anderson character. He loves the wise child.
Yes,
he does. Loves the children.
Acting like adults.
Then no more than the adults around them do.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, okay, this is a Wes Anderson movie.
The problem is, she shows up.
And disappears. And
basically has no bearing on the rest of the film. In fact, we know nothing about Anthony's background. Does he live in a nice house? I'm guessing that it can't be that bad because Grace is going to a Catholic school, which usually means you have to pay for that. And obviously they know Bob, who lives in a very nice house. But that connection is just, it felt tacked on to me.
Well, I think it's part of it is he's not supposed to have a lot of family connection, which is why I think he holds on to Dignan so tightly. Because somebody asks, so how are your parents doing? He goes, well, I think they're in Singapore. He doesn't even know where they are.
Which, again, suggests money and makes you wonder, why is he doing all this dumb stuff? Why is he ripping off a bookstore?
Why does he have to work on a paper route?
Because it's twee. But she's fine, whatever. I mean, to be fair, there are people who come out of nowhere and their first effort is very much them. And while I think he will fine-tune some stuff, this film, to me, looked very much like a Wes Anderson film.
Really?
He loves his close-ups. Oh, boy. He takes that camera and he shoves it right in the faces of his actors. He shoots things from side view. Everything looks like a postcard. In fact, this film could almost have been told in postcards.
But he didn't do what he ended up doing with those, which is all those jump cuts.
He does some of them.
He does it. One that really stood out was toward the end when they're doing the big heist. There was one smash cut, but he doesn't do a lot of them in this. I think he hadn't quite gotten that rhythm yet.
Well, and the time moves very jerkily in this film. Mm-hmm. There's one point where they're literally in mid-conversation at night, and it cuts to daytime and literally the next line of the conversation. And it's as if no time has passed, except that we need to pass time, so he just does it. It's just a very Wes Anderson thing, and I found a little jarring. But I don't know if you noticed, but this is a very white film.
Yes, yes, there are a few Latino people in it.
There's a couple black people.
There are a couple, you know, there they go. Yep, they're gone.
They're but all most subservient.
Most Wes Anderson movies are very white.
Yeah. And they're all subservient roles. All of the people of color are in subservient roles.
Yeah, they're all servants. They're all guards or something. Yeah.
You know, it's the 90s. I feel we can call him out for this. And I don't think it's changed all that much either.
No, his movies tend to be very white. I mean, I think Danny Glover is in Royal Tenenbaums.
And what does he play?
He plays, the doorman or a butler or something? He plays a servant, and I can't, off the top of my head, I'm sure there may be others, but off the top of my head, I can't think of any.
Yeah, enough of that. We don't need that. We don't need somebody making white films for white people. There's plenty of people of color out there. Try something new and interesting. So,
What'd you think of the music?
I mean, Wes Anderson loves his indie soundtracks, doesn't he?
Yeah, but you can tell he didn't have the budget for a lot of them.
There's one song in there, and I can't remember what it was, that it's like, oh, I've heard this in another film. I think it was in Juno, which, as we pointed out, see our entire episode on Juno, had the indie soundtrack to end all indie
soundtracks. Oh, my God. It has the indie 90s soundtrack.
Yeah.
The gold record stamp that you keep in the vault next to the kilogram in France, you know?
Hey, I bought it.
yep, so did I.
It was so catchy and fun. It's like, this is, I don't know any of these bands, but Moldy Peaches, who's that? Never heard of these people.
There was one song in Bottle Rocket that just caught me flat-footed. And that's when they're playing Zorro's Back.
Oh, I don't know it.
Hey, here's to flying high, la la la, la la, Zorro's Back. And I was like, suddenly transported back to 1975 with a TV movie, The Mark of Zorro, with Frank Langella and Ricardo Montalban.
Wow.
And they played that over and over and over in that movie. that was the Zorro theme, and it's like, we paid for this song, we're going to play it.
I'm sorry, did you say Ricardo Montalban and
Frank Langella? Yes, and I don't remember who played Zorro.
Okay.
Frank Langella was the dad, Don...
I'm going to bet that Ricardo Montalban played the bad, evil, rich guy.
He was the bad
town
guy. He was, yep, he was the evil captain. That's exactly right.
How did I just guess?
Yes, he was threatening Zorro that he was going to cut off his skin and turn it into fine Corinthian leather. Okay, there's an old depot.
Oh, Ricardo. Ricardo's fun, though. I like Ricardo. Oh, I even liked him as Mr. Warwick. I mean, who wouldn't?
Sure. He always looks like he's having a good time.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Besides their potential childhoodishness, why would anybody follow Dignan?
I don't know. I really don't know. I keep wondering that, too, because every time he has a plan, even from the beginning, you go, it's not going to work. I haven't seen you do anything, but I know it's not going to work.
Yeah.
First off, who robs a bookstore?
Well, obviously the people in the bookstore are thinking the same thing.
Yeah, huh? They're mostly like, huh?
You can have our $36, sure.
And what are they trying to steal from the cold storage place?
I mean...
ice? There's nothing in there.
Technically, although obviously it was also a meat plant, you do store furs in a cold storage plant.
Nobody said word one about furs or anything about what they were going to steal.
No. And for me, the film feels like it depends greatly on the charisma of Dignan or the assumed charisma of Dignan. And Dignan is somebody who, when he doesn't get his way, gets very pouty very fast. And you get the impression that they put up with it because it's, you know, did. Oh, all right.
Spoken like a gentleman.
You're just like, I don't want to hear him go off again. But it's like, this feels like somebody you would have grown away from.
But it also sounds like someone who would have hung on to you like a limpet.
Yeah. And I mean, my next question neither of us can answer, which was why rob a bookstore? Having worked in a bookstore, sure. Yeah. Before ebooks were a big thing, there were times when, yes, there was money being raked in. I mean, in comparison to other stores, not that much.
Yes, but you could literally see hundreds of dollars going in.
I mean, even...
it's not a jewelry store, for God's sake.
I mean, if you really aimed it at... during the Christmas season, there were times when there was a good chunk of change in there, but we're still talking like $2,000 in the deposit, $2,500, because people played with their credit cards. Whatever. I don't know what he's up to, and I don't.
All I could figure is there was no other business, or there, you know, maybe it was far from the police. We're looking for logic in someone who doesn't seem to use that a lot.
Yeah,
we should. I mean, it's kind of a tip off when the first thing they do, the dry run.
Yeah.
Is they rob a house, and it turns out to be Anthony's house.
Yeah. Which and seems he knows like a nice house.
It seems like a very nice house. And what did I say? Don't touch my mom's earrings.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't know, because you just know everything he says or does is going to be wrong. He is just one of those people. He is a man-child, first off. And second off, he is... this is a term that came up later. I mean, not in the 90s, more in the 2000s and the 2010s. He has an enormous amount of unearned confidence.
Yeah.
He has plenty of it. He's sure he's right. He doesn't know anything, and he has no skill. Nobody does, really. I mean, the whole reason they bring Kumar along is he's supposed to be a safecracker. And it's quite clear he's never touched a safe in his life.
No. You have to remember there's a third thing, though. He's a Wilson.
He is a Wilson, yes.
So the first robbery they do, they rob the bookstore.
Yeah.
And there's a very weird detail that Anderson, I can't imagine he didn't notice it. And he left it in, and it's problematic. Mm. So they're sitting around Bob's house, and they're talking about their take and what they're going to do, etc. And as you're looking at them, in the background through the picture window, we see a cop car's lights. And they just sit there in the background. Well,
they don't, that's right. They don't even flinch.
They cut back to one of the other actors, and then we cut back through the living room window, and the cop lights are gone. I don't know about you, but I was like, okay, the cops are here. Why wouldn't they be? They all use their first names. Everybody knows who they are.
They saw their faces. They probably have cameras in there.
Yeah. The problem is that nothing ever happens with that theft.
Yeah.
It is the Chekhov's gun of this. Gone. Yeah. We never come back to it in any way, shape, or form. There is no repercussion. There's no mention. There's no nothing.
I mean, the only thing it does do is that's where they have money. I mean, when Anthony gives all of their money, it was like $500, to Inez.
Yeah.
I just assumed that most of that came from that heist.
Yeah.
And it's like, where else would he get it? These guys don't have money.
It was just like, how could they not be caught? Like, how is there nothing? Even eventually, when Dignan ends up going to jail, it's only for the stupid last-minute heist at the end of the film. It's not like the bookstore thing doesn't even get brought up. The other two guys aren't mentioned. They don't go to jail. They're not part of it, whatever. And I was just like, that's a really weird thing to just not come back to. Did it bother you?
Not really. That sort of just went by. Part of it made me think, okay, these guys are so inconsequential, the police aren't even bothering.
I guess.
I was in there wondering, I wonder if the guys in the bookstore bothered to report it to the police.
I mean, they obviously got at least, well, they were there for the motel for a few days. They probably got close to $1,000. I mean, for a bookstore, that was a chunk of change. So I don't know. It just felt very forgotten and left to the side. And I didn't understand why that would, especially all the times that they get in trouble later on. It's like, really? Nobody's paying attention to this?
That didn't really bother me. I didn't surprise me in some ways because Dignan is so like, okay, we got to hide. We got to lie low. We got to change our hair colors. And I'm like, I just know no one is going to notice. No one's coming after you because Dignan is so sure that they will. And you just, whatever Dignan says, you know the opposite is true.
I suppose. Later on, though, after Bob has made off with his own car, and Dignan refers to it as having stolen the car.
Yeah, he says he stole his car.
They make a horrible mistake. Dignan steals an Alfa Romeo. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, you know it's going to break down. Sure enough.
Yeah, that's and what you know. He doesn't know anything about them.
No,
he doesn't know how to.
You have to have two or three if you're lucky, because one is always broken. Always broken. Alfa Romeos are notoriously twitchy cars. It's not in great shape anyway. But it looked to me like nobody parked this here. Somebody left this here.
So. One thing I was kind of glad about the relationship with Dignan and Anthony was when Anthony Hook starts, you know, falling in love with Inez.
Mm-hmm.
Dignan is kind of jealous, but you're not entirely sure if I assume he's jealous because, you know, his friend is paying attention to someone else.
Right.
He doesn't do anything awful about it. I thought at first, my first thought was when the only way she can talk to either of them is through this other guy, Rocky, who is bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocky says, as translating to Dignan, tell Anthony I love him. And I thought, oh no, he's gonna, you know, not tell him just out of spite and no, it's because he thought Rocky was actually declaring his love for Anthony.
Yeah.
He wasn't being mean, he was being stupid.
Yeah, I thought that was even a step too much for Dignan.
I don't think his stupidity had limits.
I just didn't see that, like, why would this kid out of nowhere who Anthony had spent no time with suddenly be saying he loved it? I didn't believe it. I didn't buy that part.
Okay.
We get to a point in the film, though, where basically the Fellowship of the Ring has broken up. and suddenly there's this narration from Anthony about a letter from Grace.
Yeah, the narration is he's writing a letter to Grace.
Yeah, and it's a tonal shift.
Mm.
And to me, I thought it was marking the end of the movie.
So did I.
And I was like,
that really felt like a closing piece. Like, okay, he's pulling his life together. Dignan's God knows what he, and then suddenly, nope!
There's this whole extra plot that has been, I suppose, lingering and sniffing around the corners of the background for the whole film. Mm-hmm. But basically, they get back together and go on this even dumber heist.
Yeah.
Which, the only smart person in this film, honestly, is Mr. Miller, or whatever his name is, Mr. Henry, who is James Caan, who's like, oh, I'll just distract these stupid guys and rob this guy's house.
Yep.
So,
and which then is, disappear.
Yeah, which is, you know, although they know he did it, so.
Yeah, they aren't even that upset that he did it. Even Bob isn't that upset.
Well, it's as upset as Bob gets as anything. But I don't know about you, but I was like, I don't want to see this heist.
Yeah. I was like, we don't need to. We know it's going to go wrong. We know it's not going to work. I was starting to wonder, oh, God, are they going to die? Are they going to just be killed by stupidity? It's like, no. Dignan gets caught and goes to jail for 2 years.
Yeah.
Which, quite honestly, I kind of get because he didn't do anything. He didn't actually take anything. He destroyed some property. He waved a gun around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also don't know why they only took him.
Because he was the only one on the scene and he didn't rat them out.
I guess. Although
all the people standing there stunned in the cold meat processing plant watching them go were like, what?
Yeah, who are these? I don't understand that line when he decides he's going to go back and get Applejack, who's having a heart attack. They'll never catch me, man, because I'm effing innocent. No, no, you're not. You're not. You are a criminal. You are a self-proclaimed criminal. What are you talking about? I don't get that line at all.
I think it's just meant to be his more dignanness, his indignity. I don't know.
But he gets it. I mean, even when he finally says, you know, when they're sort of reminiscing, like, we did it, though, didn't we?
No, you didn't.
No, you did not. You did nothing.
I had the same note.
Yep.
I was just getting to that, too. I was like, your timing is perfect. Yep. Yeah, uh-huh. What a
guy's a dullard.
In general, we are watching a bunch of dumb, dumb people.
Yeah.
And they're not bad people, exactly. They're just dumb.
They are dumb and they have no direction.
Oh, dear gods. They're tweedledum.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yes, they are. They are, in fact, tweedledum and tweedledumber.
Yeah, we just came up with a term for Wes Anderson characters.
Yeah.
But what's your final notes there, Max, before we get to that part?
That closing line. Isn't it funny how you used to be in the nut house and now I'm in jail?
Everybody?
No, it's not! You're wrong again! The one other thing I will say, this is one of the only times I've ever seen Wes Anderson use slow motion, and he uses it twice.
Apparently that's a thing for him at the end of his films. He tends to go switch the speed.
I don't remember that at all. I
didn't think it was that interesting, so I didn't include it. But But you know what else is interesting? Is where we get to the part where we decide whether we liked the movie or not.
The finish.
So, Max.
I'm interested.
What?
Yes?
Oh, Max. I love you so. Aww. What did you think
right
of...
Right back at you.
What did you think of Bottle Rocket, Wes Anderson's first ever major motion picture?
Honestly, I thought it was...
Yeah.
I didn't think it was bad. As a first... Oh, God. As a first effort, it's like, good for you, slugger. Look, as a first effort, it's actually fairly impressive. It moves along reasonably well. Mm. It's shot in it's in focus the whole time. It's just not great. And I still don't know why James Caan is in it at all. And it has done nothing to overcome my inherent distaste for the Wilson boys.
Mm.
And now the third one.
Yeah.
It was okay. I mean
the Wilson sister?
The Wilson sister, yes. He's the cute one.
And I'm the Wilson sister.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's not great. I think it's interesting to see where he started, but I think that's about it. What about you? What did you think?
Quick extra question. What was the first Wes Anderson film you saw? Do you remember?
Oh, God. I think it was Royal Tenenbaums.
Did Royal Tenenbaums make you want to see more by this director?
I can't answer that. I saw it the day I had gotten laid off from a job.
Oh.
So I have always associated it with negative stuff.
Oh.
So honestly, no. I don't remember. Someone convinced me to go see, I think it was Moonlight Kingdom.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, this is, all right, maybe I should give this guy a chance.
Well, so this film wouldn't have either, you think? You wouldn't have said, well, this director's got something.
I really don't think so.
Okay.
What was your first?
My first was Rushmore.
Wes Anderson.
Oh, okay. And I liked Rushmore.
Really? All right.
I didn't even know it was Wes Anderson. Like, I just knew this film, Rushmore, and it had the kid playing Max, Jason Schwartzman, I think is who it is.
Mm. Yeah.
Of course, you know, I associate the name Max with generally good things, although that smell. Oh, no. So when I found out later that was the guy, I was like, oh yeah, I'd see more by this guy. Had I seen this first though, probably not. I don't like the Wilsons either. And dear gods, their faces are filling the screen for so much of the film. I mean, just shove that camera right in a Wilson and keep shooting. The plot points bother me. I don't like it when you have a supposed major event and you literally never refer to it again. I don't understand that.
Okay. Yeah, that's
I don't like the tonal shift when he's writing the letter to Grace and it feels like, well, we've just nicely wrapped this film. Oh, we have to watch this now.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that dragged. Like, up till then, the twee level was fine. Its frequency was fine. But after that, I was just like, I don't want to see this. We've seen them screw up before. They're going to screw up again. We know they are. It's going to be bad. So, okay, fine. I was not interested by that point. It was literally, I have to get through this for the show. It's not a bad movie, I don't think, either.
I would agree with that.
And I would say, for a director coming out for his first film, there's a lot of competence here. There is a definite voice here, something we don't always see in directors, even, you know, well-respected ones. Visually, you don't instantly go, oh yeah, I know who shot this. With Wes Anderson, you always know who shot this film. So I would say if you're like a Wes Anderson fan and if you haven't seen this, you're fine. You know?
Yeah.
If you're a completist.
Unless you're a completist.
Yeah. Feel free. But honestly, definitely not of his films my favorite, or even one I particularly like. I don't care for it much. But
you know what we do care for?
Yes, I do. It's our poll question.
Yes.
And we would like to know, is there an actor, male or female, that has done something either on screen or off that has made you just say, nope, I am done? And how can you let us know what your answer is? Well, I'm glad you asked. You can email us directly like Bill O'Lading, and you can send that email off to us at maxmikemovies.com. We love getting your letters. Occasionally, we even get some feedback. People say, hey, you guys are totally wrong about this, or have we ever gotten one that said you were totally right? I don't think we have.
We've gotten a bunch that said Max is absolutely right and Mike has never said anything right in his entire existence throughout the universe.
They're all written by you.
We still get them.
You can also go to one of our sites, such as Facebook or Blueski. Or it is Blueski, I found out, because that's how Siri pronounces it.
you go and post on Blueski.
Yeah, he's good. Or you can go to Mastodon, if any of those people out there do Mastodon. But all those places we are, of course, at or @MaxMikeMovies. If you like podcast apps, heck, we're on them. We have no choice. We actually don't. People just grab our show and put it up there. And we recently made a, we made a list of million podcasts or something. What was that?
Yep, we were on million podcasts. We came in, I think, number 69 for movie podcasts.
Yep.
And for some reason, number 14 for film noir.
Ah, well, there was that series.
Yeah, one, but I guess there aren't a lot of them.
I guess not.
But go us.
Go us. And there, we weren't going to, but now we've mentioned it in our podcast.
We have mentioned it. Send us free things.
Yes, lots of free gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you can find us on podcast apps of your choice. You can go to our website, MaxMikeMovies.com. All our episodes separate. Hey, if you're looking for a series to binge, they're all laid out. Max has laid them all out by series. You can search for films to see if we've reviewed them. A lot of people don't know that. And there you can answer the podcast. I'm sorry, not the podcast. You can answer the poll question. You can leave comments, give us ideas, etc., etc. And lastly, if you would like to win a date with Max, you can call us at 617-398-7266.
Hang on.
617-398-7266. Right now, our one contestant for Win a Date with Max is Doris, so you'll have
to
fight
her. Can we go back
her.
A little bit? I didn't agree to
win
this.
Win a date with Max. Speaking of dates, Max, what are we doing next week? We're still in Directors in Short Pants. What is our choice for next week?
Well, we've been doing mostly dudes, so I thought we should give the ladies a chance.
Ooh.
Yes. So we are going to go in. You know, some people like their suicides with alcohol.
Oh.
But me, I like mine without. A virgin suicide. Okay, yes, that was a very tortured transition. Wow. You're not the only one who has trouble with it sometimes. Okay? Don't you judge me! Don't you judge me!
I have to. It's my job.
Yeah. We are going to talk about Sofia Coppola's first movie, The Virgin Suicides, which I'm sure will be a family-friendly, feel-good romp.
Is it a musical?
No.
Okay. Well,
should be.
I loved Lost in Translation. I really love that film, so maybe I'll love this one too.
Maybe so. I have never seen this. I do not know. But we will know soon, and when we know, you'll know.
So tune in next week for the Werner Herzog-esque Laugh Olympics, The Virgin Suicides.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.